It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Russia has been in the news constantly over the past few months due to its meddling in our elections, also due to our president's desire to have better relations with Russia. This half hour, we want to turn to one of our state's foremost experts on Russia and Russian politics, try to understand better the current situation from a Russian perspective. Bill Reisinger joins us once again, University of Iowa political science professor who specializes in Russian politics. Bill, welcome back to the program.
Happy to be here.
So, as a Russia expert, I just want to have a broad open here for you. React to all the revelations. There's certainly been plenty of them, the twists and the turns concerning Russia and our administration. What part of this do you find most interesting?
Well, I think one of the dynamics behind all this is just that our administration has not been able to have any consistency in the messages it's sending, right? So in the recent security conference in Europe and in other venues, the Trump administration recently has been taking a tougher line against Russia, and that has caught the Russian populace and Russian media flat-footed, and they are trying to figure out where what happened to this friendly guy that used to be all about improving relations with Russia. And there's been a lot of criticism in recent days of Trump as someone who's being sucked into the Washington, D.C. policy world and doing what any other Republican administration would have done. But he's on Russia. He's been quite far from most of the people in the top of the Republican Party on foreign policy toward Russia. It's not surprising that this is causing a lot of controversy.
Right. I wonder, are you speaking also to the fact that President Trump has consistently not criticized Russia or Vladimir Putin when plenty of others, even in his administration, have? So there's this, divide between Trump and his cabinet? Is that what you mean? Maybe confusing to our allies in Europe as well as to Russia itself?
Correct. I don't know how much it is a divide or just not being on the same page in terms of public statements and things. So they went to Europe to try to reassure allies and take a little bit tougher line on Crimea and the Minsk Accords and all that. But it has come out just sounding jumbled, and so that's not really helping anyone at this point, I think. The United States really relies on having some consistency in its foreign policy so that allies can know how to react.
Mm-hmm. U.S. intelligence agencies are in agreement, I think 17 of the agencies, in agreement that Russia meddled in our elections. That's something that's been denied by the Kremlin. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about the history of Russia trying to influence elections in other countries.
Well, it's a relatively recent development, and a lot of it is driven by the internet and the ability to hack into email servers and other things, and the ability to use social media to put out confounding messages. And so I think that this is a feature of world affairs that is just going to become more problematic in years ahead. I suspect that Russia is eager to do what it can to bring to power people in a variety of countries that are that want to question some of the principles of world affairs that have prevailed for several decades. And so they're going to take opportunities, if they can, to try to help the election chances of the politicians they see as most friendly in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Well, the U.S. also has a past of trying to influence elections in other countries. Certainly our Central Intelligence Agency has. Is this somehow what Russia is doing qualitatively different?
Well, I think Russia is using Russia doesn't have the ability in the Western countries, in the U.S. and NATO countries, to do the kind of more heavy-handed forms of influence. So they're trying these. There's sort of two strategies. One are hacking attempts of various sorts. And I assume that there are agencies in the U.S. government who take cybersecurity very seriously and are doing all they can to make that less less of a danger. But there's also just this ability now to present information that is not reliable or confusing, or just that provides a kind of "what about this" sort of argument, and gets it out there, and then the internet can pick it up, and it very quickly can confuse people about things. So that's a strategy that Russia has been trying to work on as well. But it's not from a position of the same kind of strength that that a major power would have with an allied or client state.
Mm-hmm. The other revelation, big revelation, there have been so many more recently. I'd like to get your reaction to the news of Trump aides' contacts, multiple contacts with senior Russian intelligence, as revealed by the New York Times, during the year of the Trump campaign. What jumps out at you about that?
Well, it's, so when someone in a campaign or in a transition for an administration is going out and talking about foreign policy moves on behalf of the United States before they've assumed office, then that really undermines American foreign policy. And, to me seems like clearly something that goes against the norms of American politics. But, on the other hand, the Trump campaign was all about kind of rejecting a lot of things that had seemed like ground rules in the past. But to me, that, seems like something that's really worthy of criticism. Now, if Trump administration officials now are having secretive meetings with Russian officials, then that's permissible, that, mm-hmm. They get to conduct their foreign policy in the way they want. But if they were basically saying, don't pay attention to what the officials in the Obama administration are saying, then that seems to me clearly something they shouldn't have been doing.
President Trump has denied these pre-inauguration contacts, at least from his perspective, not knowing about it. Here's President Trump at his press conference last week denying that his aides had been in touch with Russian officials. And a reporter
begins. Can you say whether you are aware that anyone who advised your campaign had contacts with Russia during the course of the election?
Well, I told you, General Flynn obviously was dealing, so that's one person, but he was dealing as he should have been.
During the election?
No, nobody that I know of.
So you're not aware of any contacts during the course of the election?
How many times do I have to answer this question?
Can you just say
Russia is a ruse. Yeah, I know you have to get up and ask a question, so important. Russia is a ruse. I have nothing to do with Russia. Haven't made a phone call to Russia in years. Don't speak to people from Russia. Not that I wouldn't. I just have nobody to speak to.
So, Bill Reisinger, what do you make of the president's insistence, his take on his campaign having contacts with Russia beforehand?
Yeah, well, I'm not in a position to, countervail anything he's saying there, but what we're seeing are things coming out about people in his orbit who were doing some talking with Russians. Now, that will whatever went on will presumably come out or not. So, but again, I think the divide is to what extent are you starting negotiations that depart from current American foreign policy.
What are your views on how Russia under Vladimir Putin views President Trump?
Yeah, it's been really hard to say. Now, of course, they viewed him as much preferable to Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama. For me, it was interesting how quickly after the reset that Barack Obama's administration launched in 2009, how quickly after that his image basically plummeted in the Russian media and Russian public opinion, so that in the last couple of years he's been just seen as, a very terrible person and a very malignant figure in world affairs in the Russian press. So very little left of any good feelings toward Barack Obama. Hillary Clinton was seen as, if anything, going to be worse for Russia on that. And so, of course, they preferred dealing with Donald Trump and preferred his election. But again, very interestingly, the that same group that's been positive toward Trump turned on him pretty quickly this week when it seems like he's not been able to deliver on a pro-Russia policy.
Mm-hmm. Bill Reisinger is with us. If you've just joined us on this edition of River to River, University of Iowa political science professor, specializes in Russian politics. Do the Europeans, and I know there are some European elections coming up as well, and there are concerns, I think, in Europe about the Russians meddling in those elections. Is the European perspective any different?
Well, the Europeans have people on many different parts of the spectrum, and so the meddling that that we're most aware of in Western Europe has to do with financing of parties that are more on the extremes of the ideological spectrum, and so there's some sense that the finances that Russia is alleged to be channeling to these parties have played a role in those parties rising to greater popularity in Western Europe. Now, there's lots of reasons why people would be voting for more radical parties in recent years, including the immigration crisis and others. So it's really hard to disentangle those things and to what extent that kind of meddling really matters. But it is involvement in the election campaigns of foreign governments, which used to be something that governments tried not to be caught doing.
Can you see through those meddling, the attempts, or whatever they are, can you see Russia's overall goal in regard to Western Europe, the United States?
Yeah, well, one of the things that Russia has as a goal is to disrupt the rules of the international order that have been around a while, and what you can call a liberal international order, which says that you want to respect national borders, you want to have democratic political institutions in countries, you want to have more open trade and other things. And it's an order that the United States has been a leader in, and that has not served Russia well from their point of view, that has not allowed Russia to return to its spot as a great power, which is very important both for President Putin and I think broadly in Russian society. And so, therefore, they want to undermine that order. So a lot of the things that we're hearing from certain political forces in Europe and in the United States have to do with disrupting that old way of organizing the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, breaking down trade ties. Trade ties aren't necessarily a good thing. More trade is not always good. Movement of people across borders. Even things that question democracy as a good way to run a country. So to the extent that Russia can help bring into prominence forces that question all those things, then that's helping achieve a goal that Russia has.
And then it must fit into that goal as well to weaken NATO.
Sure, absolutely, yeah. I mean, weakening NATO is, sort of in a more old-fashioned realpolitik kind of way important for Russia. But also it fits into, it's one of the forces that holds together Western Europe and the European Union and the other things that buttress the liberal order. So anything that calls into question NATO, I think, plays into that as well.
When we talk about the Russian people, what do they think of NATO?
Well, in surveys that I and my University of Iowa colleagues conducted in 2015, we found that 40% of Russians see NATO as a major threat to their country. Another 47% see it as a minor threat. So almost all Russians have come to see that military bloc as something that is a real threat to their country. More recent polling done by a respected Russian polling firm, the Levada Center, asked Russians whether they had reasons to fear the NATO countries, and about a total of 57% said definitely yes or probably yes. There's about 31% who thought probably or definitely not a threat. So there is some divergence, but the majority of Russians do fear NATO.
In what ways are the current times like or unlike conditions, tensions we had for many decades during the Cold War when the Soviet Union was around?
Well, the most important difference, I think, is that Russia is no longer a superpower, as much as they're trying to throw their weight around and trying to regain a status of major power. I think even they are not trying to pretend to be one of the two most important countries in the world. And, you know, and the Cold War was about dividing up the world into our side and their side in many ways. There were lots of countries that fought against that way of dividing the world, but there was still a sort of sense that you were in the American camp or the Soviet camp, and that made everything zero sum, you know, us against them, kind of in a way. Now, of course, the rise of China and other powers around the globe changed the dynamics in important ways.
Yeah, but still, we have nevertheless in our news in the last few days a Russian spy ship patrolling the East Coast. We have a cruise missile test, which is said to be in violation of an agreement with the United States.
Yeah, some of these kind of testing things are very much reminiscent of the Cold War. And certainly the hostility between the United States and Russia stepped up to a quite high level after 2014 and the annexation of Crimea by Russia and the war in the eastern part of Ukraine and then sanctions and counter-sanctions and all the rest. So any time you have two nuclear powers whose relations turn bad, right, that makes everything more dangerous. And the kind of probing that Russia has been doing is not helpful. It's not new. It has been taking place more or less regularly over the last several years. But to have now what looked like a friend in the White House and for Russia to keep doing these things, I find very interesting.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to get your reaction, Bill, to what we heard on Super Bowl Sunday. Many Americans, including leading Republicans, were, I guess, affronted by President Trump's response to Fox News' Bill O'Reilly's characterization of Russian President Vladimir Putin. Bill O'Reilly called him a killer. Trump said, "We've got a lot of killers. Boy, do you think our country is so innocent? Do you think our country is so innocent?" And the Kremlin demanded an apology from Fox News. I guess the question I would like to know is, how fair is it to call Putin a killer?
His form of control in Russia is authoritarian, but it's a relatively soft version. So, you know, Russia today is not like the totalitarian years of the Soviet Union. I don't think it's a good analogy to compare him to Stalin or something like that. On the other hand, there have been many prominent critics of the Putin administration who have died at the hands of people who probably didn't have direct orders from Putin, but who nonetheless were operating for his benefit. So that would be the sense in which he would say that he's a killer, that you know, there have been journalists and others who have been assassinated in very prominent ways, the former politician Boris Nemtsov and others. So, you know, he has his hands bloody, partly in ways that other countries' leaders do, but partly in ways that democratic leaders certainly don't. And boy, the Russians must have been happy to have the U.S. president engage in what people usually call whataboutism. And it's a favorite tactic of Russians to, and it has been since Soviet times, whenever criticism is directed at something in their society, they'll say, "Well, but what about in the United States? You have X, Y, or Z problem. You know, well, you don't treat your blacks very well, etc." And then that hopefully changes the conversation away from whatever was the sensitive subject. So I think President Trump's remarks served that purpose pretty well.
Mm-hmm. And also got reaction from, well, for one, most prominently, the Arizona Senator John McCain speaking on the floor of the Senate. Here he is in response to that news, to news that a Russian activist, a different one, Vladimir Kara-Murza, I believe is the way you say it, was hospitalized for the second time in the past 2 years after another apparent poisoning. So when McCain in this clip says Vladimir, he's not talking about Vladimir Putin. He's talking about this opposition figure, this Russian activist.
Vladimir knew that Putin is a killer, and he's a killer. And he might very well be the next target. Vladimir knew that there was no moral equivalence between the United States and Putin's Russia. I repeat, there is no moral equivalent between that butcher and thug and KGB colonel and the United States of America, the country that Ronald Reagan used to call a shining city on a hill.
Arizona Senator John McCain, quite animated there. So here we have, this is Senator McCain representing, I guess you would say, the very hawkish, old-style, conventional GOP stance toward Russia. And then you have Trump on the other side of Obama, even, in being as friendly as possible.
Yeah, to the extent we understand where the administration is going to go, because there has been this kind of back-and-forth messages, recent things. But, if we assume that Trump's basic policy toward Russia will follow the contours of the campaign, then that's absolutely the right way to think about it. That's a real, notable irony that the Republican president has now positioned himself far to the other side of his predecessor, the Democratic president, on this question of hardline realism and dealings with Russia.
What questions are in your mind as you look and we watch the news develop hourly, daily, every week here, moving so quickly? What questions are in your mind? What will you be watching?
Well, I think most of the questions have to do with the American side and what kind of policy they put together and how the team that deals with Russia gels, and so that we can see a little bit more what kind of stance the U.S. will really follow.
Okay, Bill Reisinger, thank you so much. University of Iowa political science professor specializing in Russian politics. Always good to talk with you, Bill. Thanks.
Yeah, my pleasure.
And that does it for this edition of River to River. Our program is produced by Emily Woodbury and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.